Can Florida State's defense get better in year two under Tony White? That's what we're going to talk about today as we continue our position preview series, flipping over to the defense. Now, we're going to talk a lot about this defense today, kind of some overall thoughts. We're going to look back at last year, kind of some things that they did well, some areas that they need to improve. And then if we have time, we're going to go ahead and jump into the defensive line and linebackers. But if not, we will break that off into a part two where we get into the entire position preview series. So, Michael, this is a big talking point, right? Because yeah. We feel like when we just wrapped up the offensive preview that if the offensive line can function well, this offense can be good enough for Florida State this season. But I think the bigger question is the defense, because we saw some highs last year and then we saw some lows.
Some low lows.
But, you know, as they say, offense wins games, defense wins championships. And right. So, man, we're going to need this defense to take that step in year two.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Here's the thing. As we've talked about so much, this season is predicated on two really big factors. Can the offensive line step up and be the kind of offensive line that Florida State needs from an offensive perspective? But from a defense perspective, do we have the depth of the defense? Do they get better in year two of Tony White, which we've historically seen that? And can they take another level to actually get FSU to be in these games late with a chance to win?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. I do expect them to take that step. I mean, we've seen it in the past with Tony White at Syracuse and then again at Nebraska. Now, it was more of a year one step with Nebraska, right. But he kind of maintained it in year two. So, I mean, anytime you're switching that kind of, you know, that major switch of the defense, you would expect year two to be better. Now, there is a lot of turnover that right. happened, but there's a lot of guys coming back that do have experience in this defense that can help get them up to speed. So, man, we're going to talk about all that today. Right. But before we jump into this episode, let me bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. Look, guys, we are less than 30 days now from kickoff inside Doak Campbell Stadium. And so right. if you need new gear, Alumni Hall is the place to do it. You can find their location in Tallahassee at 1415 Timberlane Road or shop online over at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and make sure you save 10% with code SPEAR. And this, if you're watching on YouTube, this is another combo brought to you by Alumni Hall FSU. Let's this go. Is one of the hats I picked up for the season, and like a hooded shirt or whatever you want to call it. It's not going to be cold enough in Tallahassee to wear this till the end of the season, but I went ahead and grabbed one anyway. So again, guys, they got tons of great stuff. So make sure you check in with them and save 10% with code SPEAR. So Michael, let's talk some defense here. Now, we are doing this a little bit later in the preseason. So we actually did get to hear from Tony White and the defensive coaches in the pre-camp pressers, which I've been doing a lot of recaps on those over at plantthespear.com. So you can make sure you check those out. But I do want to touch on a few things that he talked about before we get into the defensive side of things, looking back at last year, some of the areas, some of the strengths and weaknesses and things like that. Now, one of the things he talked a lot about this year, and even Mike Norvell mentioned, was having a lighter, leaner defense this season. They want fast, explosive, and powerful up front versus just size. Tony White said before, right, why he even runs the 3-3-5, that part of that was a lot of the places he coached, you just really couldn't recruit a depth of big, big body defensive tackles. Now, that shouldn't be hard at Florida State.
It shouldn't.
But we do know that that is a position that has been under-recruited for years now, so you got to work with the ingredients that's in the cabinet. And yes, they did lose some size last year with Daryl Jackson moving on, but other than that, they didn't really lose a whole lot of size. So what they did bring in an over 300-pounder with Jordan Sanders. We'll talk about that later. But, man, like, this is – it shouldn't be an issue to get big defensive tackles at Florida right. State, but if this is what they want to do, if this is what fits his scheme better, by all means, go for it, as long as it works, right? So I think they're just looking for more kind of havoc-creating speed, kind of powerful guys up front, rather than just having big body guys that just take up space and eat up gaps. Now, that being said, they still do have some size, right? I mean, you got Daniel Lyons at 292, Deontay McCray at 291, Kevin right. Wynn at 317, and Jordan Sanders at 310, but you've only got two defensive tackles that are over 300 pounds on the roster. And right. so, you know, you're going to have to use and deploy that speed and that kind of flexibility in a manner that allows you to create that havoc, right? That allows you to create that disruption, because you don't have a lot of size to lean
right.
on.
Right. Right. Exactly. And it's going to be interesting to see how that looks here. Like you said, we shouldn't have an issue at Florida State to be able to recruit big bodied defensive linemen. I mean, dude, Florida's growing them like they grow oranges on trees there. Like,
yeah,
we shouldn't have that issue. So, but also I understand why he feels like his defense runs best when it's this way. And in the ACC, where you're seeing a lot of more spread offenses, where you need more lightning fast defensive linemen more than you need bulk, you still need bulk up the middle, but your ends there, you want to be, you know, a la Jared Versus. You want guys like that on the end. I'll be interested to see how that looks going into this year and whether or not the depth behind that stands up to the rigorous schedule that they have to play this year.
Yeah, and a big part of what he talked about too, with kind of having that lighter, leaner defense where you don't have a lot of 330-pound defensive tackles versus, you know, 260-pound edges, is because the gap in weights and size are a little bit closer, that allows you to have more positional flexibility, which is a big thing in Tony White's defense, right? He talked a lot about that in the pre-camp presser, where, like, guys won't be locked into a certain position. You know, I doubt you're going to put like a 250-pound edge like Rylan Kennedy inside for sure. Right. But a guy who's 270 like Mandrell Desir, or a guy like Deontay McCray at 290, those are guys that can play inside or outside. Like, you might have a 290-pound edge at times. You might have a 270-pound guy like Mandrell playing inside, which he did a lot last year and did well. Right. Because, you know, with the way they work, they're going to do a lot of, you know, they're going to do a lot of stunts and twists and things like that. So those guys are going to be moving all over the front line. Right. So that's kind of why they like to do that, right? Now, another thing that I did want to bring up when I talked about this, I published the article on the website and posted about it on social media, and I did have a comment. It was a Florida fan, and he said, you know, this defense is not going to be good because a smaller defense is going to get mauled by the larger lines of Bama, Clemson, Miami, and Florida was the examples that he used. And, you know, to my point that I said earlier, Daryl Jackson was really the only defensive lineman they lost who had that big size, right? KJ Sampson was one. He was big, but he just wasn't very good, you know, and not anybody else really played enough to count.
Right.
So anyway, FSU held three of the four teams we just talked about to under 100 yards rushing, around 3 yards per carry, and one combined rushing touchdown with six total sacks. Yes, the Florida game was ugly, but obviously we know the team had pretty much quit by that game. But that's not getting mauled, man. So to me, that shows that whether you have that size or not, if you play well and you play within your assignment and you're able to do the things that this defense is asking you to do, it doesn't mean you're going to get mauled by those bigger teams in the line of scrimmage, right? Because we just said three of the bigger, more powerful teams that you would expect on the schedule, you held them all to under 100 yards. Now, Miami tore you up in the pass game and things like that, so you have to be able to cover on the back end. But yeah, I don't necessarily think this is a huge issue for them if they can play the positions well, right? And a lot of this is going to be constituted on the linebackers, because if you're running three down linemen or even four down linemen, you don't have a ton of size, you're relying on those linebackers to clean things up, which they were terrible at last year. And so that's going to be a big part of it, which hopefully Tony White, another thing that he talked about as we kind of wrap up the pre-camp thoughts, is where he said they are much further along in defensive install than they were last year. He was very candid when talking. I'll tell you one thing. Whether you like Tony White or not, man, I could listen to him talk for an hour because he is a football guy, right?
Yeah.
And he was very candid about executing better and more consistently, as well as being physical week in and week out. He said that was a big issue last year where, you know, there were times where they were the more physical team. He pointed to like Wake Forest and Alabama, and they shut down some good offenses. But he even said, man, there are times we got our butts kicked where we weren't the more physical team. And he's like, right. And he's like, regardless of what you do on the field, whether you make a mistake on a rep or not, somebody's got to pay physically.
Right.
And so that's something that they're really trying to emphasize this year, is just being more consistently physical. And now that you're ahead in the install, just allowing guys to be able to play more freely and do the things that they're supposed to do that they made a lot of mistakes in last year.
Yeah, definitely. Look, you know, last year it was very clear. Tony White even said this, you know, early on the season or somewhere. I think it was after the Pitt game where he said, you know, we just have to simplify the defense. He's very frustrated by that, having to make that statement. But basically, they weren't getting it. They weren't understanding it. And so they had to go to an oversimplified base defense to even try to put a competitive defensive scheme on the field. And we saw, you know, that worked for some games. It didn't work for other games. You know, obviously the game that really sticks in our mind is just that butt kicking through the run game they took against Florida. That's the lasting image we have of last year's team and Tony White's defense. Yeah. He's getting runned over by one dude for an astronomical amount of yards.
And that was not a good offense.
And it was not a good offense at all. And so the fact that they're further along this year is huge, which means he probably has been able to install, you know, the base, more complex, more concepts this year. And so my hope is that will parlay into a defense that looks the part, is more physical. Jesse, you can only be more physical, excuse me, when you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
If you don't know what you're doing, it's hard to be physical, because being physical means being able to play on instinct. If you can't play on instinct, you're playing on hesitation. If you're playing on hesitation, you're not going to be as physical, because you're not going to go up. You're not going to be confident where you're, what gap you need to shoot, or what, you know, what angle you need to take. Or, you know, if you know there's an end breaking route coming behind you, whether or not you need to step back a little bit or step up more, like all those things come with confidence in the system. And it sounded like he feels they're so much further along than where they were last year at the same time.
Yeah, and that's something we saw a lot last year, with just hesitation, not knowing where to be, when to be there, catching blocks and things like that, because you just didn't have an understanding down. And those types of things are going to happen.
Right.
But the problem was, it almost seemed to get worse throughout the season, right? I mean, you looked great against Alabama. And then, you know, against some of the other games, you just looked like you didn't know where to be and when to be there. So hopefully, again, as he talked about, they're way ahead on the install. So hopefully that leads to a better it has to, right? It has to lead to a better season on defense, because I don't really think, I mean, when you look across the board, I think you upgraded at most of the positions.
Right.
And so being in year two with a lot of better pieces on the defense, because, you know, we're going to get into the personnel towards the end of this episode, or in the next one in part two. I mean, other than Darryl Jackson, there's no one that I really feel like you lost that was really a painful loss. You know what I mean? So I don't think you really downgraded from a personnel perspective. I think you upgraded. And then being year two of the system and Tony White having a better understanding of the staff pieces that he's working with, being able to make some changes there on the staff as well. Obviously, we know Ernie Sims is the linebacker coach now. You changed out your secondary coach, which there's a little shade thrown in some of that pre-camp presser there.
It sure was.
Man, I think that will lead to a better performance on defense, and you're going to need it. But as we talk about the 2025 defense, man, when I look back at last year's defense, like, I wouldn't say they were quote-unquote bad last year, as much as they had a few bad games, right? Especially when they were transitioning to a completely new system, and they weren't exactly loaded with talent, right? Especially in the front 6-7. They just really didn't have a lot of pieces there to work with. Some of the transfers just didn't work out. You know, a guy like James Williams wasn't very effective for you. You had Jason Jenkins from Tennessee that got hurt in pre-camp and just was kind of never the same. And then you also had some injuries that really didn't help in the secondary, like losing Jabril Rawls and Quindarius Jones midway through the season. That didn't really help your case either. And then, you know, you were coming off a terrible season with culture issues. And even Tony White said some things in the spring about guys who were not bought in and quote unquote disrespecting the logo and things like that. And so, you know, again, the things at a microphone don't move the needle versus things on the field. But we have heard that this team is more bought in from a culture perspective. And so if that is the case, I think those are the things that will lead to a better year on the defense. But again, man, I don't think the defense was, you know, necessarily terrible last year. They just had bad moments. Like, you look at the Virginia game, you look at the Pitt game and the Florida game. Those were bad. There's no way to cut it up. Like, you got carved up by a true freshman quarterback making his first start on the road. Florida ran for 9,000 yards on you that under interim staff with a bad coach. Like, that team quit on them. It is what it is, right? But they also had some good moments too. Like, Alabama was a good game. Wake Forest was a good game. Even NC State was a good game defensively. You know, you were one of only three teams to hold Alabama under 20 points last year. The other two that did it was Georgia and Indiana, who won the national championship. You held Wake to their lowest point total of the season. You held NC State to their third lowest point total of the season. And the only two that held them to lower points was Miami and Notre Dame, who were both really good teams. And really, when you look at that NC State game, it should have even been lower than the points that you held them to.
Wow.
But, you know, the punt there at the end kind of really screwed you on giving up a late score touchdown. So, you know, I know those weren't elite offenses, but they weren't bad either. So to me, and we're going to get into some more of the numbers, but, like, I don't think it was a bad defense. I just think they had some really up and down moments. They were really inconsistent, and they had some things that just didn't work out for them.
Well, like you said, there. I'm going to kind of agree with you.
Now, I'm not saying they were good.
Right.
They were just very inconsistent, but they weren't terrible.
Yeah, they weren't terrible. They weren't like astronomically the worst defense in the country. They were so, like you said, inconsistent and inopportunistic, I think is that too. Because even in the games where they were decent, there were still chances at game-changing plays. Yeah. You talk about dropped interceptions, right? Remember in 2010, how many interceptions did we have in the entirety of the season? 4, right? So they improved their numbers this last year, but there were still so many opportunities for interceptions to be caught, for fumbles to be look like we could have fallen on a fumble to save our life if it was a giant sized beach ball. Like, I mean, they were inopportunistic. They weren't consistent, and they would go on streaks. And what I mean by streaks is, okay, so they gave up 17-3-10. That's obviously Alabama, East Texas, A&M, and then Kent State, obviously those two. But then Virginia, 46, Miami, 28, Pitt, 34, okay? 3 games where it was just like the game was over before it was over. Now, that Pitt game goes back and forth. But, like, and I would argue that Pitt game and the Florida game were the 2 worst games defense played.
By
that Virginia game was a craziness, okay?
Yeah.
It was bad, but it wasn't as bad as what I saw in the Pitt game and what I saw in the Florida game. And then they played really well against Clemson. It's just the offense just could not do a dang thing. And then the NC State game, like you said, they played great, but the punt, the punt off the top of the head, some of the just questionable offensive play calls there. So they weren't great. They weren't even good. I would say they were middle of the road. They had good outcomes, but they also had a lot of inconsistency, and they were just so inopportunistic. The hope is that this year that they take advantages of those opportunities that appeared, that showed themselves, that when they're in a crucial third down, they're not giving up 3rd and 14, 3rd and 16s, you know, stuff like that. When they have a pick, they secure the ball. When they have a fumble, they secure the ball. When they can get the sack, right? When they can make a stop at the line of scrimmage, they're not using one arm, Earl Little, whatever his name was at Ohio State, one arm tackles and stuff like that. They're not trying to tackle with the shoulder. They're just wrapping up. If they take advantage of those opportunities, then I could see this defense making a significant jump in this second year under Tony White.
Yeah, they missed on a lot of the fundamental stuff, and like the Virginia game, like you said, man, I think the most disheartening part of that game was when Chandler Morris like hurt his hand or something like that, hit his hand on a helmet, and they ran the ball like 9 times in a row, and you knew they were going to run it, and you just still couldn't stop it. And so, but I think that goes back to Tony White and just being more physical. Like, you have to come up at the point of attack, and you have to be able to be physical and make plays. And a lot of times they just weren't. And we'll get into a lot more of the reasons why and the stuff like that. But yeah, I think you're right, man. They have to do a lot better when the opportunities present themselves, because it cost you a couple games last year, and they have to get better about being more consistent as well. But when you look back from a scoring defense, they were 43rd in the country at 22 points per game, which was only 1.9 points per game away from being a top 25 scoring defense. That's only 22.8 total points across 12 games, right? So, like, you look at maybe if the Florida game, they don't quit, they could have very well almost been a top 25 scoring defense. They held 6 of the 10 Power 4 opponents under their scoring average versus Power 4 defenses, and 3 of those 6 were by a touchdown or more. 3 of the 4 that went over were within 3 points using regulation time for Virginia, not double overtime, because obviously that doesn't happen every game. Florida was really the only one that got away from you. And, I mean, I think that offense averaged like 18 points a game, 19 points a game against Power 4 opponents, and you gave up 40. So it was really bad. But, again, man, when you look at that, like only 4 of the 10 Power 4 opponents went over their scoring average, and 3 was within a field goal. So it's not like you were getting torched left and right. I know that Pitt game was really bad, but that Pitt offense was actually pretty darn good too. Yeah. They ended up being top 20 in the country last year. They were 31st in yards per play, which was 7th in the ACC. So obviously there's some room for improvement there. When you look at the rush defense, they were 51st in rush defense last year. They did give up over 200 yards 3 times, but they held 5 teams under 100 yards. They were, however, 16th in rushing touchdowns allowed. So, you know, there's room for improvement on the yardage, but the amount of touchdowns they gave up wasn't super bad. And then the thing is with Tony White, like, he's had really good rushing defenses in the past, especially at Nebraska. So you do expect them to get a little bit better there. They're going to have to do better at setting the edge. They're going to have do better with the linebackers filling gaps and cleaning things up. I think that's really where you kind of got ate up the most in the run game last year. When you look from a pass defensive perspective, they were 28th in pass defense, only gave up over 300 yards once. That was Pitt. And they held seven teams under 200 yards. The yardage was good. This is like, it's crazy because it's the inverse of the run game, right? They were pretty good in the touchdown department, but they were pretty bad in the yardage department. Well, on pass defense, they were pretty good in the yardage department, but they were cheeks in the touchdown department because they were 88th. So 28th in pass defense in yards per game. They were 88th in passing touchdowns allowed and 72nd in passer rating. So you have to clean up the touchdowns that you're giving up through the air there. Now, when we look at pressure, havoc, and situational defense, you know, this is one that gets a lot of conversation with the pressure and the sacks and stuff last year. And when you look at the numbers, I do think there's room for improvement, but I also went back and compared to what he did at Nebraska to see, like, okay, you know, was he really down from his averages or not? And kind of where this fits in from a holistic perspective, right? So in sacks last year, you were tied for 35th with 31 sacks. Which, you know, 31 is not a bad number. It's not a lot either when you look at tied for 35th in the regular season, because obviously Florida State did not make a bowl or conference championship or anything like that. So you got to put it on an equal kind of workload. In 2023, Florida State's defense, which was by all means dang near elite, in the regular season, they only had 38 sacks. So that's like, it's kind of like, that's not too far off, right? For the difference in not having Jared Verse and Braden Fisk. But then when you go back and look at Nebraska, they had 30 and 32 his two seasons there. So you're kind of on par with what you had at Nebraska. So I don't expect this defense to all of a sudden just be getting 50 sacks in a season, right? I would like to see it pushed up to around, you know, 35, 38 sacks, I think would be a nice number to hit there. But the good thing is, you were also 17th in sack rate, because you also have to look at, like, I think SMU had over 500 pass attempts against them last year, and you only had like 326. So on a per drop back basis, you were top 20 in sack rate. So that actually wasn't too terrible last year. And then when you look at pressures, which is what goes along with sacks, yes, I do agree that they need to create more pressure. But to me, it's more about consistency. Like, they were not bad at creating pressure. They just didn't do it consistently, right? When you look at the games, Bama, you had 17 pressures, 3 sacks. Virginia, you had 15 and 2. Miami, you only had 4. And they pressured you 30 times in that game. My goodness. Pitt, you had 21 pressures and 4 sacks. But then Stanford, you had 11. Wake, 16. Clemson, 10. Virginia Tech, 11. NC State, 11. And Florida, only 4, because they just really didn't need to drop back, because they just ran the ball on you the whole time. So you were 13th in the ACC in PFF team pass rush grade. Again, you got to create more pressure. You were 12th in the ACC in total pressures, but you also had the fewest passing attempts against you. So fewer opportunities creates fewer pressures. So again, man, it's like when you look at it, just for reference, in regular season only, Clemson created 211 pressures last year. Duke was at 224. Miami was at 292. And you were at 196. Florida was at 160. So you need to create more pressure consistently, right? Like 17 pressures against Bama, 15 against Virginia, 21 against Pitt. Those are great. 4 against Miami and 4 against Florida and 10 against Clemson. That's not going to get it done. So, yeah, to me, you know, I don't think they were completely awful at pressures and sacks. They just weren't consistent enough. And obviously, when you look at the numbers, right, where you're above 15 and where you're at 20, those are the games where you either won or you were really close to winning. The games where you're only getting 4, those are the ones where you just really weren't close in those games. And so you can see it's more about doing it consistently across every game of the season.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of the problem is that, you know, coming in with this 3-3-5 stack, one of the benefits that it's supposed to have is that you can come up with some exotic kind of blitzing, right? That you can blitz from every angle. That's what Tony White talked about in his open press conference. You can blitz from every angle, create exotic kind of pressures where the quarterback gets confused and can't see it coming. Well, they became so predictable. Like it was like the offense was in the defensive huddle and knew when the blitz was coming, knew where to pick it up from. So then they were trying to do, I mean, I remember early on, because of the success they had against Alabama, where they didn't have to blitz as much, that later on it was like, dude, You're not creating pressure with this front four. They're not getting home. The quarterback has so long. I mean, there's one play I remember where the Virginia kid, Chandler, was standing back there, and it looked like 10 hours he had to scan the field.
Yeah, so he could have set the ball down, tied his shoes, and picked it back up.
Picked it up, had a honey bun, and then threw the ball. Like, yeah. I mean, it was ridiculous. And then when he started to actually show pressure, it was so obvious.
Yeah,
I could have picked that pressure out on College Football 27. Like, I could have figured it out myself. And so the hope is that this year, Jesse, is that you have such a strong or perceivably strong secondary that now you can do some exotic things with the linebacker and the line, right? Tony White loves stunting, right? So what is some creative stunting look like? What does some creative pass and give offs look like? How to leverage the linebackers in that play, right? Maybe you bring that middle safety down and have him do some stuff as well too. Like, get creative with this to try to help your short on depth defensive line, who are not going to be, they're going to be faster. They're not going to be as bigger, as he said. So how do you also compensate that to create additional pressure so that now you are getting the quarterback off his track so that he can, obviously make a mistake or you're getting sacks or you're getting pressure where he doesn't complete a clean ball.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing too. Like you said, is you're going to have to get more creative with getting your pressures this year. And I think a big part of that last year was your defensive line just wasn't effective on the edge, right? I mean, Daryl Jackson's eating 2 and 3 blocks in the middle, which means you need your edge rushers to win a freaking thing. And I mean, you're talking about a guy that came in, James Williams, who was the number one pass rush graded guy in the small sample at Nebraska. Right. Those numbers were not, they just didn't work out. I mean, you only had one defensive lineman, Mandrell Desir, who had more than 2 sacks.
Right.
That's unacceptable. And so, you know, if you can get more from your edges, guys who can actually create pressure up front in a 3 or 4 man look, that's going to help out a lot with what you can do with the back end of your defense. You know, you also need to get more from your linebackers. I mean, these guys, like I was doing the, you know, looking at the positions and I'm like, so you're telling me Omar Graham didn't have a single sack last year, a single TFL, nothing. And so you need more from those linebackers. And then also, I do think one thing that will help, we'll have Ashlyn Barker back there at Rover.
Right.
Because he's a big, you know, he's almost like a linebacker himself. I think he can come up in for run support, which can either, you can bring him on a blitz because he was second in sacks on the team last year.
Right.
Or you can also let him free up your linebackers to blitz a little bit more. So hopefully if you just really got to get more out of your defensive line.
Well, I think too, the addition of Chris Jones should be a significant help to that. He's a human tackling machine. Yep. So if he's getting in the right gaps where the play is going to be run at, and he's either that Mike or Sam, whichever one, then I think that's going to actually help too as well too. So if you can use Ashton, make sure you get Chris lined up in the right situations there, then you can do some creative ways to get to the pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah, because – you know, Chris, as much as I love him as a linebacker, he's not a guy you really want in coverage either.
Correct.
So you kind of want him playing close to the line of scrimmage. You really want him playing in tight where he can fill gaps and blitz and things like that. I think that's a great point. Now, to your point about the turnovers, you're going to want to take more advantage of those. You were tied for 42nd interceptions last year with 12. Now, when I look back at Nebraska, they had 11-9 his 2 seasons there. So, again, I don't expect this number to just really fly off the charts in the next year. You know, a lot of that, man, which we'll talk about when we get to the secondary, I hate that soft freaking – I hate that soft coverage, man. I just hate it. I like – you got DBs that got talent, man. You need to let them man up and do some press coverage and be in a position to make plays. But, you know, when you look back at the history, this is kind of on par. So I don't really expect it to really pop off for just 20 interceptions or something like that out of nowhere. But again, if you can get more pressure, that's going to lead to more errant throws, which could lead to more interceptions. So really, man, a lot of it just comes to, you know, your edge defenders were one of your biggest weaknesses last year. Like,
right.
I mean, no offense to like a guy like Jaden Jones or whatever, but you're talking about a JUCO transfer who was injured most of his career, was one of your better defensive ends. Like, you need guys to be stepping up at the edge position to get that pressure, which will help the secondary on the back end. Because like you said, man, sometimes they're covering for 3 and 4 seconds because you just you got no pressure in the quarterback's face. You were tied for 58th in TFLs at 73. Now at Nebraska, they had 76 and 81 the past 2 years before that when Tony White was there. So I do think you can get a little bit better there. I think I'd like to bump that number up to, 80, 85 at a minimum. I'd like to see more havoc plays. When we talk about situational defense, you were 39th in opponent first downs per game, 60th in third down defense. They were 45th and 31st at Nebraska. So obviously there's some room for significant improvement there. Really, to me, the defense, man, what killed you more than anything else on the entire defense, there's no other way to say it. You sucked in the red zone. You were 114th in red zone scoring percentage. And to make matters even worse, you were 104th in touchdown percentage. So not only like were they getting down there all the time and scoring every time they got down there just about, you were also giving up touchdowns almost every time you got down there. So you're giving up scores, and most of those scores are touchdowns. But when I look back, comparing to Nebraska, in red zone defense, they were 20th and 49th. And in red zone touchdown percentage, they were 4th and 51 or 51st. So there is significant room for improvement in the red zone. And so to me, the big things on this defense is creating more pressure is going to help for sure, but you got to get better on third down. And there's definitely proof that shows there's room for them to get better on third down, but it really comes down to the red zone, right? Because as we always say on Plant the Spear, yards don't win games, points do. Correct. And if you're letting them score every time they get in the red zone, because I think it was something crazy, like 88% of red zone trips, they were giving up scores. And then you're also giving up your 104th in touchdown percentage. That's just how you lose games, especially when your offense is struggling to score, especially on the road. So to me, you clean those couple of things up, man, I think you have a really good chance to see this defense take a step in year 200 Tony White.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as the old saying goes, offenses win games, defenses win championship. If they don't score, they can't win.
Right.
Right. So you want to get that scoring down, especially in the red zone. The red zone, again, when you play a 3-3-5 and you play this off coverage that you and I just can't stand. Loathe. I don't know how many text messages you got from me last season about why are we playing almost 10 yards off the, I mean, it could have been 10 years off the line. Basically. Of scrimmage. I mean, it was ridiculous. On a 3rd and 4, we're still playing 8 yards off the line of scrimmage. Are you kidding me? Like, what are we doing here? I digress. When you're playing such a soft coverage in the secondary, you're basically conceding to a bend but don't break defense. Okay, that's fine. You're willing to give up yards, but you can't break. You can't break to the tune of 88% in the red zone. Yeah. That's going to lose you more games than win you games. I know I just sound like Captain Obvious right there, but right. It's as simple as that. If you're going to play this bend but don't break defense, you cannot break. You have to get off the field on third down, which means, Tony, it's possible to walk those corners up. Please, at least 5 yards. Play 4 yards off. Play 2 yards off. You don't have to play always bump man-and-man coverage. You don't have to always play aggressive. But you cannot play this soft on third down. Now, if it's 3rd and 16, sure, I might understand that, right? Unless you're Charles Kelly. But other than that, you should, like, on third down, you need to get aggressive with your corners so that you can get off the field on third down. That is a true marker of a bend but don't break, that you're getting off the field on third down. Yes, you might be giving up yards in between the 20, but as soon as you get close to that 20, you lock down and you force them to a field goal attempt at worst.
Yeah, I mean, you're giving up basically the first down in cushion every time, and because you have all that cushion, like you're not getting up in those receivers' face and bumping them off the line. So now you're letting them get in their routes even faster. So even if your pressure does get there, the ball's probably already out.
Fire's gone.
Not only do you get the first down, one broken tackle, and it's off to the races. But, yeah, I mean, looking back, you had 35 red zone attempts last year, which actually wasn't a ton. I think it was like around 30th or so in the country in red zone attempts. But on 35 attempts, you gave up 31 scores and 23 touchdowns. So, like, you've just got to get better in the red zone where it matters the most. And I think that will be your single biggest key to success this year, obviously, is getting that red zone defense. Now, from an explosive play perspective, they weren't too bad. They were 13th in plays over 10 yards allowed, 24th in plays over 20 yards allowed, and 12th in plays over 30 yards allowed. Now, to our point, when you got the secondary lining up 10 yards off the ball and backpedaling to 30 yards down the field, you're going to keep everything in front of you. So they did good, you know, in limiting the explosive plays, but you also can't let people nickel and dime you down the field.
Right.
And then turn around and give up a score in the end. Right. So those are the things that you really got to clean up. So, I mean, really, man, when we summarize kind of what we just talked about, looking at the things they did good last year, the things they did bad last year, and the areas they need to improve the most, man, you got to get better against a run from a yardage perspective. But again, to my point, Tony White had two top 10 rush defenses at Nebraska, and they were top five in rushing touchdowns allowed. So I do think with some better pieces and some better continuity, they can improve, because he has shown to have really strong run defenses in the past. You need to get better on limiting passing touchdowns. Now, at Nebraska, they were 15th and 102nd. So there's a really wide variance. So I don't know where we're going to fall in that, but you actually did pretty good at limiting the yardage last year. You need to get better on third downs, as we talked about, right? You can't have those drive killing where it's like the defense is almost off the field. You give up that third down and then they're gassed and they just keep, like you said, bending and bending and bending. Right. And then when you're bending and you're not supposed to break, but you break, that's how you end up losing these games, right?
Correct.
And to my point, you got to clean up the red zone defense big time, and you got to limit them to field goals more often. Yep. You can't be giving up six every time you get down there. I mean, if you can be at least top 40 in red zone defense, and I know that doesn't still sound great, but when you're jumping from 114th
to four, that's significant.
That's a couple of wins right there on your schedule. Right. Now I would like to see more Havoc plays, but the numbers do kind of line up with his averages at Nebraska. So again, I'm not expecting a huge change, but I would like to see more TFLs, a few more interceptions, and a few more sacks. I would like to see those get bumped up a little bit. And again, like we said, man, you got to find a way to create more pressure, and you got to be able to do it more consistently, because, you know, I do look at this defense kind of like I look at the offense, right? You have talent at those skill positions. Like, you have talent in the secondary. Mm-hmm. Can you take advantage of that by letting the line of scrimmage allow that talent to flourish? That's kind of the question that you have, obviously, with the offense. Like, can Deuce and Chroma and these guys be really good? Well, it depends on the offensive line. Can guys like Jabril Rawls and Ashlyn Barker and these guys in the secondary that I feel like have a lot of talent, can they do their job because the front six or seven, depending on how you line up, is doing their job? And that's a big question for them this year. Man, and then couple other things I'll say before I throw it back to you is, like, defenses have adapted to that heavy dose of spread, RPO-style offense, which you talked about earlier. But, man, as of late, and we talked about this with the offensive preview, talking about the tight ends, you're starting to see teams do a lot more 12 and 13 personnel against these kind of Tony White-style defenses where you're not stacking the box. Because if you can't control the line of scrimmage, they're going to eat you up, which is exactly what we saw against Florida last year. Now, quit aside, they were lining up in a lot of 12 and 13 personnel. You couldn't control the line of scrimmage, which is how they ran for 260 yards. You got to be able to come up in the box and actually control the line of scrimmage, which is huge, man. And with a lighter defense up front on the line, that's going to fall a lot on those guys being able to do their jobs efficiently, but it's going to be huge on having those linebackers being able to fill gaps and clean stuff up and not letting plays come to them 5 yards in the second layer of the defense. You got to attack up front, man. You got to get negative plays because linebacker play is so absolutely critical in this defense, and they just weren't good last year. Yeah. And so what I'm hoping, man, is the new additions and another year in the system playing as a more cohesive unit will at least help that out.
Yeah. Will you remind our listeners what 12, 13 personnel, what does that mean for the average football fan?
Yeah. So that's one running back, two tight ends, or one running back, three tight ends, which is something that's kind of come. I think you said Sean McVay is starting to run that a lot with the Rams.
Yep.
It's something that's coming about because it's funny how, you know, like bell bottom pants or something like that. Like it's in and then it's out and then it's back in. Like you're almost kind of seeing a trend of people bringing the offense back into tighter formations, being able to line up and smack you in the mouth because you're seeing these kind of lighter defenses that are, you know, the 4-2-5s, the 3-3-5s, where you're more concerned about stopping the pass.
Right.
Where they're like, okay, we'll just run the ball until you stop us. And right. if you can't do that, then we don't care about the pass. Like
exactly.
The Florida game was a perfect example. Again, I know there's quit in that game, but like Florida didn't have to throw the ball.
Nope.
They knew they could run it because you couldn't control the line of scrimmage. And so this is where you might see them have to go to that even front.
Right.
But it's still so heavily dependent on linebacker play, which has just not been good for Florida State since 2023.
Right, exactly. And so as teams are going into these 13 personnel, one running back, three tight ends.
Which I hope we use this year too.
It'd be so nice. It'd be so nice. I mean, Sean McVay, like Jesse mentioned earlier, Sean McVay, head coach of the LA Rams, he actually is the leading person in bringing this back. And the Rams used it a lot last season. I loved it. I loved it. I was so excited every time I'd see 13 personnel. And the idea is that you have the three tight ends, you're just running to the strong side every time because the defense, especially against a 3-3-5 stack defense, they don't necessarily have the bodies to constantly, like, lean on. And so the offensive line and the tight ends are just constantly leaning on them over and over again. And then when you start sucking the safeties down, now those tight ends are not just great blockers, but they're good catchers. So now you're running actual wide receiver concept routes with them. And now you're bringing in heavier linebackers who are maybe more built for the run and not coverage. And now you got these linebackers or these tight ends out there catching balls in spaces that these linebackers can't cover. We saw a lot of that against Tony White. Florida, like you said, they didn't even have to do that because DJ Lagway was already ruined the season. He was just like, I'm going to hand the ball off. Just hand the ball off over and over and over to Jaden Ball. And I mean, it was just crushing us. So if that happens again, it's not even just the even front. It's more of the bare front that they have to look at. Bare front, five hands in the dirt. You got two linebackers up. What are you doing at? You're probably bringing a safety down as well, too. That's what it's going to look like. And if that comes the case, I worry that we do not have the body on the D-line and the linebacker play outside of maybe Chris Jones to handle something like that. But you know, people are going to take that tape of Florida. And they're going to have that package in their arsenal ready to go against us this year.
Yeah. I mean, you look at some of the passing, like that Florida game, right? They only completed 15 passes for 168 yards in that game. NC State was only 18 completions for 152 yards. Virginia Tech, 10 completions for 125 yards. Like the teams that figured out they could run on you and you couldn't stop it, that's just what they did, right? They didn't need to throw the ball. And so to your point, yeah, man, I do think from a year two perspective of Tony White's defense, I think you will be better from knowing where to be, knowing where to line up. And I think you have upgraded at most of these positions. But as I think we're coming up on over 40 minutes, I think we'll break the positional previews into part two of this defensive preview. There are some concerns when you get into that, right? Because like you said, you're going to need to go bare front. You're probably going to have to use some linebackers and a lot of this run support because you just don't have a lot of depth on the defensive line. Like that is one of my biggest concerns because I don't think you did enough in the portal.
Right.
I don't think you've clearly not done enough at recruiting at the high school level to have a depth of defensive line. Now I understand a lot of teams across the country wish they had more depth on the defensive line, but when you're talking about dominant guys who you know can get the job done, that's why I say Daryl Jackson to me is the biggest loss on this team from last year because you had a guy who was, you know, 6'5", 340 and could just eat up blockers. And even he wasn't like elite.
No.
But so, yeah, I think you're going to have some positional limitations on this defense and you're just going to have to find ways to like kind of adapt to what people are throwing at you at the time, right? You can't just let someone, you know, I know a lot of times on defenses, you're going to kind of, I'm going to pick one thing to stop. Like I'm going to pick the run or I'm going to pick the pass. It's hard to stop both. But the problem is like, you know, when you have linebackers who are getting exposed in the pass game, when you have linebackers who can't fill gaps, then it's hard to pick one or the other when you're kind of giving up both. Like you're getting poisoned by both sides of it. You can't pick your poison. Which is why I think if they can get better at linebacker, it can allow them to get better across the board at stopping a lot of things because, man, I do think you have talent in the secondary. Yeah. And I do think you have some good pieces on the defensive line. Like, I'm excited about a couple of these guys. The twins taking a step in year two. I think, You know, if Kevin Wynn can hit, I think he can be a good player for you. I think Daniel Lyons can actually take a step and be a decent player for you. But I don't look at that defensive line and see a Jared Verse. I don't see a Braden Fisk. I don't see, you know, really dominant guys. I mean, maybe the Twins end up turning into that. But again, if you're just getting exposed in the middle part of that defense, you're in trouble, man. Yeah. And so to me, yeah, you're going to have to probably go more even front against the teams that are going to eat you up on the ground. And so, you know, maybe the linebacker isn't such a huge part in that when you're running four down linemen or five down linemen in a bare front, like you said. But if you're going to try and run this 3-3-5 with a lighter, leaner defense, you got to have a better year from the linebacker. Yeah. So, yes, I do think this defense will get better. I also think you're going to face a little bit tougher slate of offenses when you talk about an SMU and you got Miami with Mensah and the two good receivers. Louisville's a good offense. So, like, you got some good offenses coming up this year. So, you know, we just like we talk about overall with the schedule, this team might be a little bit better than the schedule shows.
Right.
Just like you're going to face some really tough offenses this year. And so you're going to need this defense to step up, or else you're going to end up getting in like an old Big 12 game where it's just like a shootout. And I'm not comfortable with a team that leans more on the run.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable with asking Ashton Daniels to throw the ball 40 times in a shootout. I'm just not. So you need this defense to be better and be better more consistently. And to me, man, that starts with, like we talked about, nailing the fundamentals, cleaning up that third down and red zone defense, creating more pressure. And it really starts up front with that defensive line. You got to have guys who can set an edge. You got to have guys who can get pressure. And then you got to have linebackers who aren't a complete letdown behind them. And so if you can do that, I think the secondary is good enough. This defense can take a good step in year two, but man, we're going to have to see it on the grass. And I'm telling you, like, that SMU offense and Kevin Jennings as a quarterback is one of the better quarterbacks in the ACC. You're going to be put to the test pretty darn early in this season. So, man, we're going to have to see it, and we're going to have to see it quick because, you know, again, like, while this defense wasn't bad last year, they were very inconsistent. If you can get the Alabama, the Wake Forest, and, you know, the NC State type of games, you got something to work with. You saw it. Like, you saw the flashes of what you need.
Right.
But, man, if it's Pitt, Florida, and even Virginia, you're in trouble.
Right, right. Well, and the thing is, what Tony White has to get this defense to do is, instead of being reactionary, you know, Mickey Andrews always talked about, we want to dictate the terms.
Yeah.
We want to dictate what the offense gets to do against us, right? And so that goes a little bit about go to what you said about picking your poison. You know, defenses want to try to stop one thing. Okay, yeah. You know, Florida State did that. Remember last year against Miami, Florida State came out and said, we are not going to let them run down our throats. Yeah. We're not. We're just not going to do that. We're going to come up to the line of scrimmage. We're going to challenge the wide receivers. We're going to challenge the line of scrimmage. Miami could not run for basically three quarters of that game. But you know what they did do? They threw it over top of us.
They torched you.
They torched
repeatedly
through the air. And so but that point was, we just didn't have great, I won't say players in the secondary, but probably development and coaching, probably what was happening there. Yeah. Okay. So this year you have better secondary players. What I'm saying to Tony is, man, hey, go dictate the terms. You tell a team what they're going to be able to do. Hey, you're not throwing against us today, so you better hope you get your run game works, right?
Yeah.
Or you ain't running against us today. You better hope that freshman, sophomore quarterback can bail you out in this game, right? Go dictate the terms. I think that is what this, regardless, if a team comes out and runs 13 personnel, great. You're going to load that line of scrimmage, and you're going to say, I dare you to throw the ball against these, you know, what one NFL scout said is a first-round draft pick in Jabril Rawls, right?
Yeah.
Come on, Ashton Barker. Yeah, go ahead. You try to throw the ball, but you ain't running against us. They need to dictate the terms this season.
Yeah, and to your point about that Miami game, that's a really good point. Is like, okay, if you're going to say, I'm going to stop the run, but I'm going to, you know, we'll see if you can throw it, right? And then you get four pressures on Carson Beck.
That's the problem
because you're letting him sit back there and eat a sandwich and throw the ball to Malachi Toney, and then you just got torn up. And so, and that was a really good offensive line for sure. Yep. But yeah, you got to find a way. Like, if you're going to, you got to dictate terms, like you said. It's one of them things, you know, where he talked about being physical more consistently. I definitely understand that. Like, hey, man, I'm not saying we're going to win every fight.
No.
But you need to know you were in a fight by the time the game was over, right? And so that's what you really got to do. So, you know, to bring this home, guys, again, we're going to break off the position, the actual position previews, the personnel stuff into part two, because we don't want to run you too long. But I do see you know, I do see a path to them getting better. Yeah. As I said, man, I think most of the pieces you lost off last year's team, I ain't crying over that. You know what right. I mean? Like, Daryl Jackson was the only one I feel you really miss. I think at pretty much every position across the board, I think he got better. It's just the depth I worry about up front. But I think year two of this scheme, with a lot of guys returning that have experience in it, apparently a new attitude, a little bit yep. more intensity from the coaching staff, I think there is a path to get better in year two under Tony White.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I can definitely see with improved secondary play, it allows you to take a little bit more risk from an exotic blitzing standpoint. I think with the improved linebacker play, which we're all hoping for since we haven't had since 2023, I think adding that Chris Jones, and we'll talk more about him in the position preview, I think adding somebody like him, getting improvement from, you know, Amar Graham, who's his last year, Blake Nicholson, LaValle, some of those other kids there. Yeah. And then that defensive line stepping up. Yes, this is year two. Typically, we've seen improvement there. Obviously, like you talked about, better attitude. He's already talked about that. You know, he made some spicy comments about just some of the guys that just, you know, they kind of had to deal with because they were all fighting for their jobs last year. Let's just yeah. be real. Let's just call a spade a spade. They were fighting for their jobs. And when you're fighting for your jobs, you're willing to put up with just some crappiness because you think these are the guys that give us the best chance to win, even though they're the cancer of the locker room.
Yeah.
They give us the best chance to win. So we're going to put up with it. I mean, case in point, Edwin Jones against Stanford.
Oh,
Edwin Joseph, sorry. Where he basically cusses out Mike Norvell and in front of national TV, and Mike pulls him out. They have a screaming match. And then he's back in the next play.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here? Well, because you're fighting for your job. Year two, obviously,
you're still fighting for your job.
You're still fighting for your job. But look, you have nothing to lose. You're either going to lose your job or you're going to keep it. So play the best guys that also are great culture fit and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah. And to your point, I mean, when you're coming off 2-10, like, first off, you had culture issues to begin. We know there was a lot of quit on that 2024 team, guys loafing and all that stuff. Right. And also, who were you going to attract in the offseason?
Exactly.
Right? At least this year, I know 5-7 wasn't good enough, but I feel like some of the portal guys that you brought in, no, I don't think they did enough on the defensive line, but I feel like the linebackers, they did a really good job with some of the guys they brought in. The secondary, I think they did a really good job back there with some of the guys they brought in. Again, we'll talk about that in the next part of the episode. But yeah, man, it was tough last year. And so hopefully this year leads to a better turnout by the defense because we're going to need it, right?
Right.
We don't know what this offense is going to be. I think it can be good, but, you know, if you can have like we said, they were only 1.9 points per game average, only about roughly 3 touchdowns and a field goal away from being a top 25 defense. If you can push up into a top 25 unit and that offensive line is decent enough to where this offense can be top 30-ish, man, you got something to work with. It's really – we're going to have to see it on the field, and we're going to have to see it consistently.
Yep.
You're going to have to be physical. You're going to have to do all the things that Tony White talked about. And so, yeah, man, we're going to see because they got 2 tough tests coming up in the first 3 games of the season where if you're not physical, those teams are going to beat you up. And so, yeah, there's no time to sit around and question anything, right? So that's going to do it for part 1 of the defensive preview. We'll be back next week with the personnel part of this where we'll talk about the defensive line, the linebackers, as well as the secondary. We'll kind of get into the nuts and bolts of who all is coming back, the guys that we just talked about and you know, who we have confidence in, maybe where we have some concerns from a position group standpoint. But before we get out of here, let me bring you the message, man. If you want to be connected to Plant the Spear, if you want to get in and on the conversation, look, we're, like I said, less than a month away from the season starting. The best place to do all that is in the community that is built for those that bleed garnet and gold, and that is the Plant the Spear community. Look, guys, we're having some good conversations in there. All of our content is in there, so you can keep up with it. It's like an app-like experience, so it's right there on your phone. You can just tap the icon and get straight there. Now, it's not an actual app you're going to find in the App Store, but you can get it from our website over at plantthespear.com. I've actually got a new little section up there when you go to our website where you can sign, or you can go right over to the boards and sign up as soon as you hit the website, right below the header on our website. And if you join the insiders, which I will say you can get started for absolutely free, 100%, no strings attached account, just by a PTS community membership. You can get started there and you can get all of the content that we do. You can comment on everything. You can get in on the conversation completely for free. But if you want to help support independent FSU coverage and all the things that we do here at Plant the Spear, you can sign up for an insiders account, which starts at just $8 a month. And we just did our first hat giveaway in the PTS Insiders. One of our members, who is an insider who was leading the community leaderboards for being the most active member of the community, we just sent him a brand new hat from Alumni Hall. It's the one back there behind me that everybody was loving that I wore on last week's episode. So we went ahead and shipped him one out. So congratulations to him on the winner. But that's just one of the many reasons to join the PTS community. So I'm telling you guys, the more people that sign up, the more fun it's going to be. Look, we got 3,000 plus subscribers now, which I appreciate you guys pushing us over the 3,000. We got over 3,000 subscribers. If you ain't signing up for the PTS community, as Jalen Ramsey says, what is you doing? Go ahead and get in there before the season starts. But again, guys, we certainly appreciate your support. If you enjoy these episodes that we're doing, go ahead and drop a like and subscribe on the YouTube channel. A rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other Noel fans. Again, check out the website. You can find everything we do over there at plantthespear.com. I'll link it in the description. And you guys can go straight to it from there. So with that being said, make sure you check back for part two of the defensive preview where we'll go through the personnel. Make sure you go back and look at our channel where we have done deep dives into every position group on the offense. And, you know, it's almost that time, Michael. Once we wrap up the defense, it's going to be some camp talk. It's going to be some schedule previews. It's going to be some record predictions. And then it's time for game one, man. I'm excited. So we are almost there, ready to see how things shake out. But you guys lock in with us, and we will catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.